Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of The Journey of Hope. Glad you could be with us today. The Journey of Hope is a podcast that's especially designed to address the issues that men and women face after incarceration. My guest today is Harris Glasser. Harris has written a book. Check out this title. It's My Money and I Want It. Harris has got some great ideas for ex-offenders as they return home, things to do with credit card debts, whatever it might be. We're going to try to address it today with Harris. He's an expert in this area. Harris Glasser, right after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. Sure do love to get mail from you. You can always catch me at mathersrodney@yahoo.com. That's mathersrodney at yahoo.com. Let me know how you're doing. Everybody, and welcome back. My guest today is Harris Glasser. He's the author of It's Money and I Want It. Harris has got a down-to-earth, practical approach to money issues. The name of the book is It's My Money and I Want It. I believe I said that wrong at first. But Harris is going to be speaking with us today about issues related to money. And we're going to try to steer the conversation towards issues that ex-offenders run into when they might be coming home from incarceration. Harris, welcome to the Journey of Hope.
Wonderful to be here. Wonderful to be here.
And Harris is calling from the Northeast. And what's it like up there right now?
Right now, we're going to be having in the Northeast the coldest winter, the coldest week of the winter, they said. And it's pretty darn cold.
That's interesting, because I just read in the Houston Chronicle this morning that they believe that wintertime is over here in Houston.
So, wow.
You know, we have this little, 4 or 5 days of 40-degree weather, and then it's done. So.
Oh, that's lovely. That is wonderful. Send some over here.
Okay. Hey, listen, when people come home from incarceration, they got a lot of unpaid bills. They're dealing with credit card debt. I had some credit cards where, had been turned over to collection. Talk to us, Harris, about how to deal with that kind of a situation where the debt's gone into collection and, you're getting harassing phone calls, and we all know how that goes. Talk to us about that.
Okay. The first thing we have to realize is a collection company is just a business like any other business. They are not a government agency. And that person calling you, which so many of us, when the call comes, we don't want to answer the phone. We don't want to talk to them. They look to rattle us, shake us up. But the interesting thing is we need to understand, first of all, Rodney, in this country, we do not go to jail for owing money. Okay. There's no debtor's prison. There's no such thing. We don't want to be in debt, but there's nothing wrong with it. That's the first thing. Okay. Next thing to understand is that person calling on the other end of the phone, that's not the sheriff or some government official that's coming to arrest us. It's a person who's been given a script by the owner of the business.
Okay.
And the script is meant to intimidate and rattle us and shake us up. But once we realize that isn't anybody on the other end of the phone, okay, we could breathe a little sigh. Now, to just to show you how the comical part of it is, we're out of work. We need a job. We can get a job working for a collection company and then be the person on the phone with the script calling ourselves or others.
Right.
That's how, you know, how ridiculous it is in terms of getting shook up by that other person.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, there are ways to talk to these people, not to avoid them, because a collection company is just a hired gun from people you may owe money to.
Okay.
They will not negotiate with you because they only get a percentage of what they collect. So I'll make up a number. Let's say you owe $1,000 for this particular bill.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to get 25% if they collect the whole $1,000, right? Now, if we had the money to pay it, we would have paid the $1,000. So we offer a settlement. I'll make up a number. $200, they're only going to get 25% of that, which is $50. So collection companies, you can't negotiate with them. They're not interested. Collection companies also only get the debt for a certain amount of time. It's not infinity. After a certain period of time, whatever they're contracted for, it could be 3 months, could be 6 months, it then goes back to the original party
mm-hmm.
with whom you can negotiate.
Okay.
Understand this, too, that a lot of collection companies, what they'll do is they will go and they will buy debts, old debts, from parties that are owed the money and give them, you know, maybe 10 cents on the dollar, give them nothing, but they're happy to collect it. Mm-hmm. And what they'll do is they will go after people, everyone on that list. But the truth is, when you get a call from a collection company from a very old debt, you call your Secretary of State, right? They're wonderful people. You see, every state has a statute of limitations in which they can come after you.
Okay.
So when that collection company calls, right, because they've paid only pennies, they may take a settlement, but here's the thing. You don't have to pay it. And the minute you send them $1, you've already reopened the statute of limitations and done away with it.
Wow. Okay.
So if it's an old debt, you call the Secretary of State's office, and they'll tell you the law, the rules in your state, after how long it's not collectible. And you can just kiss the collection company goodbye.
Great.
You can
advice.
Tell them that, too.
Yeah,
another way
advice.
Is, because they're a hired gun, people try to avoid them. They don't answer the phone. And the collection companies depend upon harassing you enough so that at some point you'll say, okay, I'll make payments, just leave me alone. But no, no, no. We don't want to do that because we're in debt. We have problems. We probably owe more than one debt.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to run them out of town. And how do we run this hired gun out of town? It's very simple. And in the book, in my chapter 3, section 2, I go into great length of simple little ways to handle them that they never call you back. And Rodney, I'll give you a very, very simple, easy one.
Okay.
They call, you pick up the phone, and they'll start talking to you about you owe this money and you owe that and you have to pay it and da da da. And you just listen. You don't respond. You go, uh-huh. Well, you're going to pay it? No, sorry, I don't have money. Well, you know you have to. And they go on and on. And you let them. You do not get pulled in emotionally. You do not get defensive. You just, if you want, before you pick up the phone, breathe. And as you're reading, having my book open in front of you and you see all the different responses and dialogues, mm-hmm. you let them keep talking. Mm-hmm. And a typical response could be anything like, you know, you are terrific at talking, and I do not want to be rude and hang up on you. Yet I can't pay you, and yet I have a lot of things to do. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put the phone on speakerphone, and you can keep talking. It's not a problem. And I have some chores to do, the dishes or whatever, and I'll take care of them doing my job, my chores, and you keep talking, doing your job. Now, anytime you want me, call my name, I'll come running back. Otherwise, you know, keep talking, I'll be listening. And if you get tired of talking, it's not a problem. Call me back tomorrow. I'll put you back on speakerphone, and you keep talking, and I'll keep listening and doing my chores.
I love it. Just real briefly, you brought up, you know, the harassing tactics. Let's, you know, I don't want to get too far off into this, but is there anything we can do about the kind of tactics that are used? The latest, I'm told, is that they're calling neighbors. They're calling people's neighbors. And they're also, I had one guy tell me, they told him that they were going to call the district attorney's office. What about those kind of dirty tactics? Is there something we could do about that or not?
They'll also, if you do have a job, for instance, they'll call your job, they'll do these things. Now, the idea is you want to record that in terms of, you know, speak to your neighbor. If they called your neighbor, you know, have them tell you who called, the name, what day and time. Mm-hmm. Get a little record of this. Now, if they harass you on the phone, try to record it, because in the book, I have an article by a gentleman, Ron, he's wonderful. What he does is he owes the banks, different banks, and credit card debts about $100,000. Mm-hmm. He tells his story. He said, and the collection companies don't stop calling him, and he records it, and they all do harassment tactics. And by the way, there are very specific rules and laws about this, mm-hmm. which are federal, because they use the phone lines and the mail to harass, so they're federal. Mm-hmm. And you can go online and look up the rules and laws on collection companies, mm-hmm. so you'll know if they're in violation. So what he does is he records them. And then he goes ahead and sues them for the harassment. And because they're in violation of the laws, and he has it all recorded, and he has, you know, from his neighbors or his job or whatever, he has all this, right? They settle with him. Now, this is how he makes a good part of his living, he says. And insofar as the $100,000 he owes to different banks and credit cards, he's very funny. He says, as far as I'm concerned, I don't owe anything. He said, because you see, the government took $1 trillion of my and everyone's tax money and gave it to the banks and never asked me if they could.
I've thought about that myself.
Which the banks rewarded themselves over and over with multimillion-dollar bonuses. Mm-hmm. So as far as I'm concerned, he says, I owe them nothing, and I continue to make a good piece of a living just by suing them by their harassment tactics.
Wow.
So your answer is keep records of everything. If you know, there's rules on how often they can call. Mm-hmm. They can't call you 10 times a day. They can only call you, you know, let's say once every few days or something. Mm-hmm. You record it. You know, anyone they call on your behalf, you know, you have them, you write it down. And then you can present that to the Attorney General's office.
My experience was that the further down the line the debt went, you know, people would give up on it, then it would go to somebody else. Each time, the tactics got a little bit sleazier. Okay, there's just so much to talk about there, and I know you address all this in the book. Another issue offenders run into when they come home is they haven't filed any income tax in a long time. What would be your advice on dealing with the IRS and getting squared away with them?
Well, that's a simple thing because, you have to. I don't know about the rules of when you're incarcerated about having to file your income taxes. There may be very specific rules, but there's on that. But it's very easy to get a copy of your. Just like if you're away, you're out of the country, and there's some obligation. You just have to prove, your whereabouts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And present that to them. But like I said, that gets very technical, which I don't even know if all accountants can even answer that. But my suggestion is you always go, right to the horse's mouth, which is you don't hide, you don't duck away. You go right for it. Like I said, with the collection companies, you go right for them. And you call the IRS and you go, look, I've been incarcerated for 18 months. I had X amount of income, from some interest or from nothing or from
monies
I received. How do I go about dealing with this? I supposed to have filed, 6 months ago and I wasn't able to. And it's a good chance what they'll tell you is just, have your accountant or you file an extension, and you give the basis of your extension. It shouldn't be anything much more than that. But like I said, even accountants who that's all they do for a living may not know the specific rules.
Yeah, I know it can get kind of complicated. But dealing with the IRS is something that you address in your book. We're going to switch gears here in just a second.
Okay.
We're going to take a real quick break. And when we come back, more with Harris Glasser. It's My Money and I Want It. I love the title of that book. We're going to be right back after this. I'm Rodney Mathers and you're on the Journey of Hope.
Ankle bracelet. Tracking device, impossible to fake. Couldn't get a job no matter how hard I tried, except for busting rocks. And fuck this shit, you gotta be kidding. You work at Jack in the Box. Hey.
Hey, everybody. I thought it'd be kind of interesting at this point to bring my wife on and talk about what she did about income taxes while I was incarcerated. But first of all, you don't like this song very much, do you?
No, not really.
It's got bad words in it.
It's not my favorite.
What did you do about income taxes when I was locked up? How did you handle that?
Well, I put you in there and just put that you had no income. So I would put us in as married, but with you having no income. So it was just my income on the tax report.
So that way when I came home, I wasn't behind on taxes because you went ahead and put me on a joint return.
Correct.
But you just put me down as no income, and there's nothing illegal about that or anything.
No.
I mean, that's exactly what you're supposed to do, I believe. And
right.
So here we are.
So it worked for us.
Will you ever get to like this song? I don't think so.
No. Mm-mm.
We're going to be back after this. I'm Rodney Mathers. You're on the Journey of Hope. Welcome back. We're speaking with Harris Glasser. His book is called It's My Money and I Want It. Harris, a lot of guys, when they come out of prison, what they decide to do is to start a business because it's so hard to find employment, especially nowadays. You address finding businesses and getting rolling in the book. How do we find the right business to go into? How does that work?
That's a great, great question because it's, an idea pops in my head. Gee, I'd like to be in business myself. So the first thing is you have to choose the type of business in terms of there are retail businesses, there's wholesale businesses, there's service businesses, there's brokerage businesses, there's manufacturing. So that's something for oneself they have to figure out. And you need to look to see what's involved. In other words, I went into a business, car rental, not realizing it was retail. And that's the last thing I ever wanted to be, was in a retail business. And after it's in there, I go, oh, my God, I'm in retail. So you really need to choose the type of business. Now, once you have that down, now you have to say, do I want to be involved with a partner or do I want to go this alone? How much money is involved? And if so, I do need a partner. Is it a silent partner or is it someone who's going to work side by side? Next, going into a business, do I want to start a business from scratch or do I want to possibly buy an existing business? Which if you do, you're going to naturally need accountant and lawyers to check books and records and everything to make sure you're getting what you're paying for. So they're starting from scratch. There's buying an existing business that you know works. And by the way, when one does that, I've seen it happen too many times, they buy what works and then they change it. And before you know, in a year, they're out of business. It's one thing to make, you know, to try and make little improvements, but if you're buying what works, stick with it. I mean, you know, I've sold a business, and it's very clear because I wanted my payments, he had 6-7 years to make payments, that he stayed in business. And he said, no, he was very smart. He said, I'm buying what works. I'm just staying with it. Then there's also buying into an existing business. People advertise, you know, they want to work easier. They want to share the load. So they're selling a half their business. They want to take in a partner. If that's the case, well, there's a lot to talk about because a partnership in marriage is more than a marriage because you're spending more time together than you are with your mate. And it's all about money, which can be stressful. So there's a lot of things to talk about. Even if it's a new business and you're not buying into a business, new business with a partner, the hours that you have to be in agreement that you both want to work. Maybe each partner has a different income need. One only needs X amount and one needs 2.5 times X amount. That's big. It's addressed in the book. These are the questions you need to look at. Now, once you decide the business and whether you want to be a partner, not a partner, into a business, you know, buy an existing one, now you have to decide the type of organization. There's sole ownership. There's a corporation. You could be an LLC, a limited liability corp. You could be an S corporation, which is a partnership with protection of a corporation. And they all serve their different purposes. Not one is better than the other. You need to discuss with your accountant what will work for you best.
Okay. Well, another question I had is, you know, let's say you open up the newspaper and I see businesses for sale. There's always like a bunch of liquor stores, UPS stores. I think those are, you know, kind of the lower end get started type businesses, and let's say that you got a buddy and y'all want to go in halves on buying that business. You don't recommend doing that on a handshake, right? No matter how good of friends you are.
Nothing is done on a handshake ever. I've seen where not to do with business, but a casual thing between friends. Like I said, not a business deal, just a little thing between them. And I suggest strongly in the book, okay, because even if it's not a business thing, always in writing. And if it's not a formal business thing, you just may say to your friend, you go, look, a year from now when we're going to consummate this little thing that we're doing together, we may each remember differently how we spoke about it. So why don't we just take down a few notes? We don't have to sign to it or anything, but just let's jot down so we have between us that we're both on the same page. Mm-hmm. So a year from now, we don't look at each other cockeyed and go, wait, Joe, I remember that different. I think we said this or that. You got that, Rodney?
Right. I do.
Yeah, I've seen that too often. And it's not on purpose, just the human mind remembers it differently. Now, no less when it comes to business, there's no, and I don't mean this person is not your friend. There's no such thing as a friend in the sense of it needs to be spelled out legally, every I dotted, every T crossed, and that you're both in 1,000% agreement. And you need to use two different attorneys because there's, I mean, you know, I'm very close to my attorney and stuff I've done with some people, I was very close. And the attorney wasn't happy about it because he says it's like a conflict of interest. I'm representing the two of you. I said, but the truth is, if the two of us are in total agreement, not trying to get the better or the upper hand, then what all we need for you to do is to put it down in legal terms on a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
You follow? Because yeah. Sometimes partnerships, each one's looking to get an upper hand over the other. I don't like that at all because that doesn't sound like it's a good basis.
Mm-mm.
So I like the use of one attorney agreed to as long as you're both really sincere about taking care of each other. You see, if you each partner will take care of the other, mm-hmm. then the business is going to be the fruit. It's going to grow. But if each one trying to get the other up, you know, slouches off a little, doesn't show up on time all the time, or whatever the thing could be, no good. No good. You have to be dedicated to each other, and the business will be the child mm-hmm. that's going to grow big and strong.
Harris, we're running out of time here. Where do we get the book?
Okay. On my site, which is www.harrishelps.org. That's Harris, H-A-R-R-I-S, helps.org. And when you purchase the book, you just sign up for what I call a free monthly update, which has about 10 incredible articles by other experts of ways to save, help, keep, and protect your money.
Mm-hmm. This looks like an excellent book. There's so many other things that you addressed that I wanted to get to that we just ran out of time. Things like how to reestablish your credit once you're ready to start doing that. Harris, we might have to have you back on sometime and go a little bit deeper into this. Harris Glasser, the book is called It's My Money and I Want It. Harris, thank you so much for being on the Journey of Hope today.
Absolutely, you're welcome, and I hope listeners are uplifted and helped by our little talk today.
I guarantee you they will be. We're going to take another quick break. We'll be right back after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. Another program come and gone. I want to thank my special guest, Harris Glasser, and I want to remind you that if God is for you, who can be against you? We'll see you next time right here on the Journey of Hope.